The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Kate Lever, the author of The Friendship Cure, joins us now. Kate, thank you for joining us. And I'm fascinated by many things in your book, but particularly the contention that having friends is every bit as important as getting regular exercise and having a nutritionally balanced diet. Why so?
Ah, I'm so pleased you picked up on that point. I think it's one of the most fascinating things that I've learnt since writing the book. Basically, there's this astounding amount of new science that says that loneliness and social isolation is incredibly dangerous. In fact, as dangerous as smoking 15 cigarettes a day, and more closely linked to our mortality than things like obesity and poor nutrition. So as you say, yeah, on the flip side of that science, friendship has incredible health benefits and affects everything from our kind of vulnerability to dementia and stroke and cancer to mental illness and insomnia. So while we sort of have always traditionally thought of friendship as something that affects our mental health and happiness levels, it also, as new science reveals, has the propensity to affect our physical health as well, which I think is fascinating, if not ominous.
Okay, define friendship for me as against having a relationship with an acquaintance.
Right. Okay. I think you sort of cross over into true friendship category from territory, from acquaintance territory, when you are able to share confidences with one another, when the relationship you have is based on loyalty, and when there is a level of candor and support that you exchange in crises. So old mate or Aristotle believed that friendship was formed through going through hardship. And in his case, he was often talking about the literal experience of war or battle. But I like to think of that more figuratively and think we sort of go through emotional battles together every day. And so often going through something awful can consolidate a friendship, or just simply being there for one another when one of life's obstacles comes up.
So that suggests a level of trust, perhaps, which may vary depending on how good a friend somebody is or not.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's really important to make that distinction between a good friend and just an ordinary friend, because I think it's one of the great things we take for granted. And actually, friendship takes time and the investment of energy and even skill. And we have to proactively maintain them and work out how to be a good friend.
Does that mean, though, that some people are better at making and keeping friends than others, that it might be something innate to their character?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I think the best friendship thrives on empathy and kindness and candor. So naturally, I think people who are better at those things are probably better positioned to be good and trustworthy friends. I think you can learn to be a good friend, and I certainly think it could be taught. And I think friendship should be the type of skill we talk about in schools, in universities, and with our children. So I'm not saying it's impossible to learn to be a good friend, but I think there are definitely people who are naturally better at it.
Okay, what about true friendship? Because sometimes you say with friendship, it's supporting people through thick and thin. But what if that friend has done something that you know to have been wrong? Do you support them continuously because they are a friend? Or do you say, no, I can't because you've done something wrong?
Well, that is such a tricky one, isn't it? I guess it's interesting with friendship because I suppose, I mean, my mother has always said to me, Kate, even if you commit murder, I'll visit you in jail every day. That kind of unconditional love that comes from a biological link.
That's quite an incentive, she said to.
But I think with friendship, it's a more sort of, I mean, technically speaking, a more tenuous connection because they're the family we choose to have rather than want the ones we have genetically. So there's not that kind of overriding obligation to stand by someone. It's more of a choice. So, I mean, I think it's impossible to make a prescriptive rule on that because it would certainly be a case-by-case basis. And you'd have to consult your own levels of morality and ethics to work out whether you could stand by someone through wrongdoing. I think certainly if it's a minor act of wrongdoing or something you would classify it as a mistake, then being there can be really important. I think it is definitely going to be a matter of a personal call, whether that person's behaviour becomes harmful or dangerous, whether you need to extricate yourself from the situation and get out of the friendship.
What about, though, drifting away from a friend because of time as years elapse, or location because you no longer live close to where you might have been friends with that person?
Yeah, look, I think drifting happens so much, and it's part of why I wrote the book, because I think we're allowing good people to drift out of our lives purely because we don't prioritise friendship. There's an Oxford University study that says we lose 2 friendships every time we get into a serious romantic relationship, and that really alarmed me. And I think it's because we put a premium on romantic love and forget how good friendship can be.
So explain that one a bit more to me. Is that the case? You know, I suppose you hear of it that you meet somebody, you fall in love with somebody, and you discover that you lose some of your friends because your friends don't like that person you've decided you're in love with.
That could certainly be one of the reasons. I think, I mean, when I heard that statistic, I more kind of thought of it in the sense that you suddenly want to spend all your time with the person you're falling in love with, and especially in those kind of heady, lovely first stages of love, you kind of want to be with that person all the time, and suddenly dates become the most important appointments in your diary, and, you know, friendship outings kind of fall by the wayside. So I saw it as more a logistical problem, that we just didn't invest as much time and energy into friendships because romance kind of took over. But certainly I think if there's a disagreement between your friend and your boyfriend or girlfriend, that is definitely a point of conflict, and you could certainly lose a friendship that way as well.
Well, allied to that, should your partner's friends be your friends?
Oh, such a good question. I think basically, I think with this situation, you have to find a working harmony where you are able to be a level of friend with your partner's friends, where you're able to go on double dates, triple dates, go to parties, see each other in social interactions, and be able to have, you know, a lovely sort of at least semi-meaningful conversation with them. I don't think there's necessarily an obligation to become completely enmeshed in that social group and to make them your own friend. I think that's lovely if that can happen ideally. And certainly I think you should be able to get on. I think you should be able to get on with your partner's friends to some extent, because I think if you don't, there may be something not quite right with the relationship, because as far as I can see it, your friends are a representation of elements of your personality. So if there's a genuine real clash there with a lot of them, then perhaps you need to have a look at how compatible you are in the first place.
Can you have too many friends? And the reason I ask that is I'm reminded of a story of a fella that I knew who genuinely, on being introduced to somebody, once said he didn't want to know him because he had enough friends and didn't want any more.
That's very harsh. Academic from Oxford University who does a lot of friendship studies, Dr. Robin Dunbar, says that we can maintain 150 friends. And that is just the capacity of our brain can not maintain any more than that, no matter how many thousands of people we have on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. That's kind of an incorrect measurement.
Yeah, hang on. Are they really friends, the people that you know on social media?
Well, exactly. They're not. I mean, beyond that 150 mark, they're certainly acquaintances, or even, you know, I don't even have a word for a more distant thing than an acquaintance. But we certainly wouldn't call them genuine friends, because our brains simply can't comprehend that much intimacy. We only have a finite amount of it, and we have to distribute it amongst the people we care about. So I think, yeah, it's possible to try and have too many friends. I think it would be logistically impossible to have more than 150 people in your life that you see and speak to regularly. In fact, the full 150 seems like a lot of time to spend on people. And look, I wrote in the book, and I truly believe it, if you have a handful of really good, if you can count on one hand the type of people that lift you up and make your life better every day, who make you a better person and who you can count on in times of crises, then you're an incredibly lucky person.
The book is called The Friendship Cure. Kate Lever, thank you very much for giving us your manifesto for reconnecting in the modern world.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.